Welcome back to the Stroh's Bros Podcast. I am your host, Richard Perez. On deck for today, we've got talk of David Martinez and Paul Clemens making a spot start on Tuesday for the Houston Astros, coming out of the bullpen and going to be a starter. We're going to talk about the signing from the Mexican League of Jafet Amador and Leo Heras, Jose Altuve, and we're going to talk about the Corpus Christi Hooks' push for the playoffs this coming year. All that and more right after this.
There it is! The Astros have won the Central Division title.
It's gone! It's gone! It's gone!
Line drive right center field, that's number 3,000!
One away to say goodbye.
And now, you're listening to the Astros.
All right, gentlemen, today we've got Lee White and Alex Sandoval. Guys, how y'all doing today?
You know, I'm actually pretty good. A little tired. Got class in the morning.
I'm all right. Just here chilling out, watching the VMAs.
That's pretty cool, guys. It's pretty cool. So, it just broke right now. Breaking news. We have breaking news on the Stroh's Bros. Paul Clemens getting the start for the Houston Astros this coming Tuesday against the White Sox in Chicago, a rematch of the 2005 World Series. What do you guys think about that? Go ahead and start it off for us, Lee.
You know, it seems crazy, and it actually kind of is crazy. I really was hoping David Martinez would get to start because he pitched pretty well in his debut. But Paul Clemens, he's been pitching in AAA Oklahoma City. He's actually been pretty good since he got sent down. Maybe he's worked on some stuff and got adjusted. I don't know. Tough to say when he's doing that in AAA. But I generally think of Paul Clemens as a back into the bullpen type guy. And with him getting the start, maybe they have another future, I don't know, scenario for Paul Clemens that I don't see. I think Paul Clemens, you know, set up maybe closer late in the future. Could be a spot start, but I don't know. I say we see where this goes.
Yeah, to be perfectly honest with you, I'm pretty shocked. I didn't expect Paul Clemens back until September call-ups. I mean, I was kind of with everybody that it was going to be David Martinez starting on Tuesday. But this is pretty crazy. I have to think that Lunau and folks want to see Paul Clemens before they make up their mind. Mm-hmm. But the 40-man roster spot coming up this winter, apparently that's going to be a big deal, the 40-man spots. So I kind of see where they're coming from. Like Lee was saying, I mean, he had a very good – he's been pretty good since he came down to OKC. So why not? What the hell? Let's go.
Yeah, the way I see it, it's not like it really matters because this game really doesn't – it doesn't really matter, you know, as the teams really aren't going for anything at all for this year. This year isn't for anything for these two guys, for these two teams. So I think it's decent that this might be Paul Clemens' final opportunity to be a starter. I don't know if y'all would agree with that, but I think it might be a final test for him. And whether he passes or fails, I still think it'd be best suited for him to be a, you know, end of the bullpen, not necessarily a closer, more of a setup man, sixth, seventh inning, or maybe even an eighth. So that's just how I feel about Clemens. I'm a little bit surprised about this. But he's not a bad pitcher, and we'll see what he can do starting off on Tuesday against the Sox, who really don't have much of a intimidating lineup. But anytime you go out against a major league ball club, you've got to be on your best game.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, Paul Clemens, he actually, contrary to his numbers, you know, he's pitched well in games. He's given up a lot of home runs, which was a problem for him. He actually has good stuff, though. You know, he's got a hard breaking curveball. He's got a nice hard fastball. It sits, what is it, mid-90s, I think? Somewhere tops out at 95, if I'm not mistaken. You know, he's not bad.
I agree with you guys. I think back at the bullpen kind of guy. In fact, early in the season, I was actually asking for it. I was like, man, mm-hmm. Barris was kind of struggling slightly, and then he caught it together, but then the eighth guy was an issue. Because we had Hector shut down Ambriz, and he wasn't shutting down anybody. So I was asking for it, but then he went into funk right before Cisneros went into a funk, and that was that for that. But Yeah, I agree. Hard curveball. I think he had more of a 12-6 style curveball. And he had a nice fastball. It's just he gave up a lot of homers as a reliever, which is normally the sign that he's probably more suited for the rotation. But I don't know. It's going to be tough to tell. Look, Brett Oberholzer, they did this, and Oberholzer was horrible as a reliever. Not horrible, but he was mediocre at best. Came back, and he's been starting rotation. It looks like it's his calling card. I think hopefully Clemens is the same exact deal.
And, you know, in the end, I really do think that Clemens and probably Oberholzer, too, end up becoming bullpen arms. But right now, next year even, they can be in the rotation, you know, as long as they can pitch and as long as they can perform. Like, that's why I have no problem with keeping, say, Dallas Keuchel in the rotation. Long-term, is he a rotation? Definitely not. But is he doing bad enough to lose his job? No. No way.
Yeah, I feel the same way. If he's doing his job well enough to keep it in the meantime, then, you know, there should be no problem throwing him out there to pitch and eat innings, as it were. So I'm pretty glad. I hope Paul Clemens can do well. But as I said, I would see him as, you know, in the future he would be not in the rotation, so an end of the game in the bullpen. Sorry, am I getting a little bit tangled up there. Moving on now, going on to the signing of Jafet Amador and Leo Hedes. I want to get your thoughts on that, Alex, and what you think about the signing of those two guys.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm not going to sit here and say that I follow the Mexican League, you know, religiously, or that I know a ton about the league. But, you know, I have read up on it. I understand what it consists of, which is pretty much a double-A, triple-A combo type league. From what I understand, Arias is, like, the stud. He is their, I guess, Andrew McCutchen-type outfielder. Very, very athletic. He can hit. He can run. He can play defense. At that level, Jafet Amador is a beast. He's 315, 6'4". He's a monster. He's probably bigger than Prince Fielder, but the guy can hit. He's obviously well advanced for that league. And, you know, if he comes over here and he does 260 with 25 home runs, 100 ribbies, 90 ribbies, he's not going to play defense. He's just too big. So he'll be a DH. That's fine. Leo Arias, hopefully he can develop. He's 23. Amador is 26. So Amador is pretty much a finished product. So if we see him, we might see him in September. If not, we'll see him definitely in spring training for fighting for a spot on the active 25. Arias might be a few years away, but he's 23 and he's doing really well. I'm excited. I mean, hey, it's a pipeline, man. Get that started because nobody seems to be wanting to tap into those resources down in Mexico. And there's some really good players down there. Then there's some retreads down there, but there's some really good players doing pretty good stuff. So, hey, all the better for Lou now. More talent, the better. The system's already the deepest in baseball. Add two more guys who you never know. If one of these two guys hits it big, it's an investment worthwhile.
Yeah.
Yeah.
go Lee.
I was just gonna say, you know, I don't really know much about these guys either. You know, I don't think they're gonna be like superstars by any means. But Jafet Amador, the dude, whew. And if I'm mispronouncing his name, I'm like three shades too white to pronounce that name.
You got it.
The dude rakes. The dude rakes. He really does. He can hit the ball, and it's no way that he's going to come up to majors and hit 368 and 36 home runs. That's crazy. But he's definitely a DH type. He's good. Now, a guy from ESPN, I don't know how to pronounce his last name. I'm just going to call him Dan Z for the time being. He said that, you know, he loves these signings by the Astros. And he also says, you know, they're not, you know, superstars or anything, but they're really good signings by the Astros. He says he doesn't want people to be too hyped up about them, but don't be, you know, oh, these guys are just okay, you know, because they're actually really good players and they're really good signings, and it's going to actually help the Astros out in the long run, getting the pipeline, like Alex said, started in Mexico, so that's always good.
Yeah, I was going to say, as you just said right now, it's going to be a pipeline opening up to Mexico, basically opening up the door and setting an establishment that the Astros can dominate, I guess you could say, recruiting in Mexico. And Leo Harris, starting off in Double-A Corpus Christi, he's 3-for-8 in his first two games. Really, really good. I have not had a chance to see him yet, so I'm excited to go out and see him. And Jafet Amador starting off in Triple-A Oklahoma City, just in case anybody was wondering where they ended up. And so I'm really excited to see what these guys can do. You know, as Alex alluded to, that Jafet might be a finished product. I'm really looking forward, and I'm hoping these guys can do good. Really looking forward to seeing them in, as a September call-up, and to see what they can do in the major leagues if they do get there. So what I'm really excited for is that people in Mexico can see these guys that, you know, hey, this is a gateway to the Major League Baseball. It's not just in the Caribbean. It's just not, you know, down there in Cuba and Central America and down in the Caribbean, Cuba, Dominican Republic, and all that. So that people can come from Mexico and play baseball there. It's just another opportunity to have great players come from different on all parts of the world.
You know, and I will say one thing. Chris Carter, you know, we all love Chris Carter. We'll talk about him later. The dude has a lot of holes in his swing, and he is also a finished product. I mean, I think there's a little bit more growth than Chris Carter, but he's basically finished. Amador has a real deep, good chance of sticking with the Astros big league team next year because their competition, who's in his way? Chris Carter? I think Amador right now could come up and hit 23 home runs and do the same thing Chris Carter's doing. I think Brett Wallace is an option, but that's another guy whose leash is running very short now. Unless they go sign another guy out there, I don't think anybody at Triple H is a DH type. Could come up right now and do what he can do. Again, I'm really excited for Eris because he's got the skill set to be really, really good, not just a guy. But that's a couple of years down the road. Amador, I'm really excited about next year. I think he's gonna surprise some people. It's gonna be weird. He's gonna be one of those guys that like ESPN's gonna showcase and be like kind of a freak of nature type thing, sideshow freak kind of thing. But he's going to mash. He's going to mash. And if he comes, like I said, if he hits 260, 270, because the guy can hit, hits 20, 25 homers, drives in 90 runs, I don't care how he looks. He could be Godzilla and be fine with me.
You know, I'll be honest, though. The only thing I'm afraid of with Amador is what happens if he turns in, like what happens if he just becomes Carlos Lee at the end of his career where he's hitting 270, but all he's doing is hitting singles. You know what I mean? He's not really driving the ball. That's the only thing I'm worried about, but he's a big, strong man from what I've seen. You know, I've seen little clips here and there. I'm not a scout or anything, but he's 315, he's big, and he's hit 36 home runs. He's got to have some strength somewhere. So I don't know. I'm just afraid that if he hits, he may just hit singles. I'm just a little afraid of that, but I really am anxious to see him play. I'm ready to see him and – Harris, I don't know if that's how you pronounce it.
Close enough.
Ready to see both of them. Ready to see both of them play because, you know, competition, like you said, it's going to be fun to watch. Astros just depended on what happens, you know. Hose has turned into a good player. Grossman's turned into a good player. What looked like it was a really weak outfield next year is looking like it could be really good, led by George Springer.
Springer!
Yeah, man. To continue on, tonight Leo Harris drove in a game tying triple tonight here in or not tonight in Corpus, but in a game between the Hooks and the Missions that we'll probably talk more about later. But Matt Duffy hit a homer and Harris hit a game tying triple. So there's that for Leo Harris. Good news. Speaking of.
We are coming.
They're coming. Right now, guys, I think we'll take a little bit of a break here on the Stros Bros podcast. We'll come back talking about how Altuve, talking more about the Hooks and their playoff push, all that and more. Keep it locked in on the Stros Bros. We'll be right back.
Oh!
And we're back with the second half of the Stros Bros podcast. All right, so I understand, Mr. Sandoval, you have a little bit of a rant you want to share with us. So why don't you let your feelings be known and let our ears be your and voice your opinion?
Yeah, okay, thank you, because yeah, I do have a rant, and I do have something I need to get off my chest. And I've kind of been hard on this guy on Twitter because I see a lot of love for him. And I see a lot of, oh, he's only 23 years old. Oh, he's a young kid still. Oh, got to give him more time. Jose Altuve, to me, is becoming, has regressed, and is becoming somewhat of a guy who everybody seems to just oversee his faults. The organization, too, for that matter. But again, I'm not going to kill the organization because they know much more than me. But Jose Altuve's had a bad year. I mean, let's just be completely honest with each other. And I think he has regressed in a very bad way, because last year I could start, you could start to see, and even though his season wasn't, I mean, he made the All-Star team. His second half was very pedestrian, but he made the All-Star team. You could kind of see him working on his approach at the plate. You kind of could see him starting to try to become that hitter we all wanted him to be. And then this year he said, screw it. I'm going to just swing at everything. And he is swinging at everything. He has stopped taking pitches. He has stopped trying to work counts. He is swinging at everything. And what concerns me is recently, I forget if it was McTaggart or one of the or Brian Smith before he left to do the Texans beat, had wrote an article about him, and Porter had made a comment saying they don't want to mess with Altuve's batting approach because that's what makes Altuve Altuve. What's making Altuve Altuve is a 660 OPS. He's in a horrendous slump, and since April, he's been pretty much awful. I don't want to kill the guy because he is only 23. He still has a long time to go, but for a lot of people to have said, oh, he's second baseman of the future, and Leonardo Shields is trade bait, that could be true, especially after they locked him into a very friendly deal, which I don't think makes a difference whether he's traded or not. I think that's even makes it more likely he could be traded. But the fact is, I don't know if I want this guy to be my second baseman, even if he does improve, because how much more will he improve if he's already regressing from what they told him to do last year? So I'm just getting it off my chest because I see a lot of love for the guy, and I like the guy. I think he's a nice figure. I think he's a nice addition, but he's I'm not sure if I'm ready to say he's second baseman of the future at all.
I can agree with that. I think there has been a little bit of a, I guess, a overwhelming love for him, almost a blind love for him, as if he's the second coming of Biggio. In reality, he might not be. He might not even be close to it, or it could be. We never know. But, however, he is obviously having a bad year, a pedestrian year, as Lee said earlier. And who knows, it could just be 1 year where he's just, I guess you could say, in a sophomore slump, because last year was his first full big season in the major leagues. And as we said, he's only 23, and there's plenty of depth in the farm system at second base. So if he doesn't work out, you know, it's not like the franchise is riding on this guy's success. If he fails or succeeds, it really doesn't matter either way, because there's more to come in the farm system. So I really think if he does blossom, it can only help us even more. But if he doesn't, it's not going to hurt us one bit either way.
See, with Altuve, you know, my thing is he's having a pedestrian year. He's not hitting like we'd want him to. But honestly, he's hitting 275. It's not that bad. The problem I have right now is the 312 on base percentage.
If he hits
275, I'm definitely okay with that. But I want him to do like last year. He hit 290 with the 340 OBP. 340, I'm okay with 340. It's not great, but it's not bad. His OPS last year was 740. He's 5'6", you know? What I mean, he's not going to hit. If he can get 740 OPS, I'm also fine with that. He's not a power hitter. We got to know what he's going to do. He's not really going to drive in runs. His big problem this year is he's not walking. Like Alex said, you know, he's swinging at a lot of things. He's not striking out a ton. You know, he's only struck out 69 times, but he's only walked 28 times. He needs to – you see him more times and not flailing at a breaking pitch down in the dirt more than, you know, taking that pitch, which he needs to be doing. I know he can tell the difference, but I don't know if he thinks he can hit it, or I don't know. But he's hitting 275, so that's not that bad. Now, I think, you know, for me, my whole thing with Altuve has always been, well, he's not a superstar. He's not going to be a superstar because he doesn't hit for power. Superstars at some point hit for power. Am I wrong? I mean, I don't know a superstar that just hits for average. You know what I mean?
Unless you're Ichiro. No, you're not. You're absolutely right.
True. I forget about Ichiro, but he's got like three. He's creeping up on 3,000 hits. He's got what, like 2 or 3 more years before he has to get 3,000?
According to ESPN, he has 4,000 hits.
Yeah, I'll say that for a different time.
That's debatable.
But now for Altuve though, you know, he's not ever going to be a superstar, but he's not a bad player to have around as a mainstay. You know, our superstars are still in the minors. George Springer, he could be a superstar. You know, John Singleton possibly. Jason Castro might even emerge as a dark horse who hits 275 and hits over 20 home runs and drives in a lot of runs. You know, it just depends. Now, with Altuve, I can see where people, you know, would be like, well, we should have traded him when his value was high. But honestly, he's not a bad guy to keep around either, to be honest. But it's just how he's utilized is my problem with Altuve.
Yeah.
I agree. I agree with that. I think that's a big problem for me, the way Porter sticks him in that 3-hole and just keeps him there.
See, but again, though, Porter didn't really have anybody to stick in that 3-hole other than Jason Castro. But Jason Castro is the best hitter on the team. I'd put him in the 4-hole, let him drive in whoever is on base, because right now it's looking like Grossman or Hose is getting on base every other time they're up, so...
Talk about a great addition. LJ Hose has been an outstanding addition. Yeah. I want to, before we move on to that, I want to add on, Ricky Henderson was a superstar that did not hit power.
But see, here's the thing. He stole a ton of bases. Altuve, he steals bases, but he doesn't steal like a crazy amount. He has like 28, I think.
Yeah,
if he stole 60, yeah, he could be a superstar. Yeah,
and I will say one more thing on Altuve. That injury, he's still not healed. I will give him that. Yeah, he was actually doing a little better before the injury, and he actually had a nice little streak going. But after that injury, he's never been the same, and you could tell where it's bothering him. I don't know why they don't just force him to go on the DL for a little while and get healthy. Or maybe he just won't get healthy, and they just screw it. But I will give him credit. I will give him a pass for that.
And the other thing, though, is – maybe he's pressing. There's a good chance that he's pressing, you know, trying to be something that he's not. And in the offseason, they're just going to have to sit down and tell him what he is, what they want him to be. You know, you don't have to be this guy who's going to yank the ball out of the park all the time. Just hit it to the opposite field. Move the runners over if you have to. You know what I mean?
Just David Eckstein. Excuse me. Sorry.
Hey, but is he really that bad, David Eckstein?
David Eckstein won World Series championship.
Exactly. Okay. David Eckstein has a ring.
David Eckstein was an annoying little troll. I'm sorry.
Yeah, okay, but that's fine. He hit 280. He walked a lot. He had a 380. Actually, I take that back. He didn't walk a lot, but he had a 345 on base. I don't. If that's my second baseman, I'll take it. But I'm going to put him back into the lineup. You know what I mean? And I'm perfectly okay with that because Altuve's not going to be a power hitter. He's not going to be. I don't know. I think he's more likely to become David Eckstein, which really, to me, isn't that bad. He's scrappy. I'll give him that, David Eckstein.
Scrappy. Scrappy the dog.
So, I guess you could say, in conclusion, it's not really bad for Jose Altuve. It's not a bad thing at all. I don't, at least in my opinion. I think he's probably trying to, I think he might be pushing himself a little bit too hard this year, and that's why that injury is still nagging and bothering him. So it's just not all that bad. I think this year just might be a bad year for him.
You know, that's very possible, but I think the real, like, my real expectations for Altuve has to be 280, you know, batting average. But on-base has to come up. It really does. His on-base percentage has to come up. Other than that, I'll take David Eckstein. You know what I mean?
Yeah, if it was me, give me 280. Give me a 340 on base, 350 on base. Play decent defense, which he has improved. But, man, he's got to walk a little bit. He's got to take some pitches. I mean, it's painful to watch at times when he just swings at the first thing that And yeah, he'll bloop once in a while. He'll bloop one once in a while. But here, oh, it's painful for me to see that.
I'll say this about swinging at the first pitch. For, you know, a guy like Altuve who, let's be honest, when he's on, he's hitting the ball like crazy. He's, you know, he's getting a ton of hits when he's on. So for a guy like Altuve, I don't mind if he swings at the first pitch as long as it's in the strike zone. You know what I mean?
Well, it
I don't
drives
mind
me...
first pitch swinging as long as it's in the strike zone. Now, when it's, you know, down in the dirt and he's flailing at it first pitch, that's when it drives me nuts.
It makes it worse for me because after you see Robbie Grossman take 8-9 pitches, LJ Hose takes 7-8 pitches, and then Altuve takes two pitches, mm-hmm. and pops up. It's annoying.
It is.
Yeah, that can drive me crazy, but, you know, like I said, as long as it's in the zone, I don't mind him swinging because he may not get a better pitch to hit.
Yeah, he may not. I think plate discipline during this offseason and upcoming spring training will be a big thing for Jose Altuve to work on.
And really, it needs to be a big thing for everybody on this team to work on.
Yeah, it really does. I think plate discipline should be really pushed next or this even coming up offseason because leading the league in strikeouts isn't something to be proud of. But then again, with this kind of a team, it's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And see, Chris Carter, man. That's my Jose Altuve.
Go. I want to hear it. I know you had something to say about Carter. Let's hear it.
Chris Carter, to me, that's my Jose Altuve because I want that guy to succeed. I mean, I'm going to give him every shot because, man, the guy's got power. The guy has 23 homers on, like, 1,000 strikeouts. It's like, you know, just make more contact. Hit 240. Mm-hmm. If you hit 240, you're going to hit 30 home runs. And the guy walks. That's mm-hmm. the sad part. His on-base percentage is lousy, but you take into account he's batting under 210. It's not bad. He walks. He's actually patient. He'll search out his pitch, except he can't hit the pitch most of the time. It's frustrating, man. I'm dying here. I'm dying.
See, for Chris Carter. I'm a huge Chris Carter fan. I'll take his bag every day, 9 days out of 10. You know, he makes it hard on me. I'm not gonna lie. He makes it real hard on me to back him up. But I love Chris Carter. You know, honestly, I really do believe. I've watched as many games as possible this year. And I know you have two legs, but the dude at one point in time he was improving big time, like. He was really improving. He was taking the ball the other way. He was hitting it up the middle. He was taking sliders, which was a big thing for him early on. And then all of a sudden, it's like whatever he was doing, they just said, you know what? That's good. Stop doing that. And boom, I mean, it all came crashing down. But honestly, I really do believe Chris Carter can hit 240. And it's not crazy to think about. I mean, in only 67 games last year, he hit 239, but he hit 16 home runs. He made more contact. He hit 30 or 16 home runs in 67 games. That's a pretty nice little 162 average right there. If he could hit 240 in 162 games, good Lord.
Freaking Minute Maid Park's killing the guy. I'm serious.
Yeah, I think you may be right.
Yeah, as you said earlier in the off the air that he's just trying to take it out into the Crawford boxes and inflate his home run numbers.
Mm-hmm.
But it was weird because for a while there, you know, it was obvious that his swing had changed because they told him hit toward the center of the field, hit the opposite way. So he would take some weird, funky swings, like on slow motion swings. But he was actually doing really, really well, even at Minute Maid for a little stretch. And then he just stopped. He just like, he said, screw it. This ain't working or whatever. I don't know what he thought.
See, I really hope they address that in the off season and coming into spring training because I guarantee you the organization wants to keep him around. I mean, I use this as an example. Jeff Luhnow traded for the guy. Some people were like, that's not a big example. Well, I guarantee you he could have traded him during the trade deadline as well. He's trying to rebuild this guy, and people are already ready to give up on him. It takes more than 162 games to rebuild somebody. He was really a rebuild project. They want him to hit 240. And they think he can, and I promise you, if he figures it out, he can hit 240, and he will drop some major bombs. He's got 23, 24 with a 212 batting average? I mean, I'm really high on the guy. I love his power. It's definitely a game changer. But
to me, the thing is, look at his home road splits, and if the guy can do what he can do on the road, Why can't he do it at home? I mean, I don't expect him to go 290 with 38 bombs or whatever and 120 ribbies, but at least even it out. I'm hoping next season, after a season at Minute Maid, he'll get it and those splits even out, because I think it's going to be – and, yeah, the base betting average with bases in, with balls in play is ridiculous. I get that. Mm-hmm. But it's also ridiculous on the bat side too at home. It's like, what is going on with him?
Yeah, his home road splits are so outrageously awful for him being at home. It's really crazy. It's to the tune of 260 and 160. That's the batting average, and that's pretty ridiculous. That's really ridiculous, actually. You know, and it 260 with 14 and 160 with 9. Targeting batting average and home runs. That's pretty crazy. And I don't know what to say about that. You know, if he could hit 240 on either side, just even it out, I'm fine with it.
Same here.
Yeah, I think you could also take a little bit of this this argument and apply it to the Jose Altuve thing. It's really just a project. It's all it is. Despite them being two totally different players, it's basically the same thing. They're kind of like – they're different players just in the same situation.
Yeah, they're just – the organization believes in them, that they can change. They can make a difference. We all got to remember that this is also Chris Carter's first time being a starter, first time having to make adjustments. You know what I mean? And that changes the game drastically. Nobody wants to think about that, though. They just want to look at the strikeout numbers and the low batting average and wipe him away. But honestly, he has to make adjustments. I think he's going to. First year being a starter, you know, with Oakland, he was once, I think, a top 100 prospect. There's a reason why, you know what I mean? It's not like this dude is garbage. No, he's not. He can hit, whether it's 240 or what, but I think he can hit 240, to be honest.
I think so as well, and I think what another thing, plate discipline, as we said earlier, Chris Carter, I believe leading the league in strikeouts. Am I right?
Yeah, you're right, but it's not like he's blowing him out of the water, because Mike Napoli 2 weeks ago was leading the league in strikeouts.
So he's right got now, some competition up there.
Yeah,
I got yelled at for comparing him to Mark Trumbone, but
he can definitely be Mark Trumbo. I'll even say if he can hit 240, 250, he can be like a Jose Bautista. Now that sounds crazy, but really though, all he has to do is hit 240, 250, and he hit 240 last year. You know what I mean? And it's just because of who those two players are that it sounds crazy, but he's got light tower power.
Yeah. And this really is his, I guess you could say, first full year starting. He's played more games in this year alone than he's played in previous years combined. So really, it's a learning curve, as it were.
So, him and Dominguez, those are my two guys. Well, Castro is a different league on its own. The guy's a stud. But Dominguez, Carter, and Grossman are my favorite. And the guys I will give every single opportunity to succeed with this team.
Yeah,
I don't know. Sorry, go ahead, Rick.
I was like, kind of like how Lee is with Brett Wallace.
Yeah, you know, Wallace, y'all are going to hate me for this, but honestly, Brett Wallace is Anthony Rizzo. Now take that as you will. You can say that's calling him a compliment.
Oh, God.
Well, you made that comparison. I remember you and I talked about this. You made the comparison earlier in the year, and yeah, your stats kind of back it up. Well, at the time, backed it up. I don't know how Rizzo's done recently.
Since his call-up, Brett Wallace is hitting 250 in August. You know, it's not good. It's not good, but it's not that bad. You know, I've really, to me, what it feels like for Wallace is people want him to do bad rather than they want to see him succeed. I'm not saying y'all do, but there are definitely people who would rather see him fail just because he's hadn't been that great. But for Wallace, though, I mean, he's hitting roughly 250, 260 since coming back up. And it's still, I mean, it's a steady 250, 260 because he's been hitting it the entire time since he's been called back up. And I wonder, it's not great. You know what I mean? It's not great by any means, but
It's not bad.
Oh, I'm sorry. With Brett Wallace, I almost wonder if he isn't just destined to be a really good bench guy. Because I looked at his numbers when as he came back, and they're decent. I mean, they're actually decent. He's in about 250. I think his on base is a little low, but it's not hard. Well, I'm not sure on that. But his slugging is really good. He's hitting the ball out of the ballpark, which is something they've been wanting him to do forever. He's actually now doing it at a fairly good clip. But is he just – maybe he's – is he just not a bench guy? Will he end up being a really good utility guy who can play third and first? And I mean, is that a bad thing? If he does become that, is that a really bad thing if he becomes a really good utility guy?
You know, that's really not a bad thing. That's one thing that I think is keeping Jake Elmore on this team is that he can play the corner outfields and he can play anywhere in the infield, including pitcher and catcher. So –
Yeah, I agree with Lee.
Lee kind of took the words out of my mouth that everything that I just had to say.
I'm kind of good at that, you know.
Lee, the all-knowing.
Yeah,
basically. I just hog all the words.
Just hogging the words. All right, guys. Well, as we tend to wrap this thing up, last thing I wanted to get out here, the Corpus Christi Hooks have clinched their playoff spot, but. The opening series, I guess the divisional round, I wrote an article about this, it should be up by now, that the game five is going to be awarded to whoever wins the second half title of the Texas League, and right now, the Hooks and the Missions are in a tight race for it, with the Missions being one game ahead after tonight, after the Hooks beating them, they were ahead by two. And this is going to come real down to the wire. I wish you guys would be able to see this because it's going to be a great final 12, 10, 11 games for this series season to wind it out. And then for the playoffs, it's going to be really good. Just wanted to talk about that for a little bit, just bring that up. And a lot, I think all of – are all of the affiliates in the playoffs? Because I know Quad City's clinched tonight.
Quad City's clinched. Jethawks have clinched both first half and second half
OKC's titles.
Yeah, OKC's like a win away from clinching. Corpus Christi is clinched. I think the only two teams that have left to clinch are Tri-Cities.
And Greenville.
And Greenville. And then every what is it, affiliate will be in the playoffs. And that is insane. That's really pretty nuts.
Yeah, that's amazing. That's something to behold for this organization to really just completely turning around. So that kind of just blows my mind that the entire Astros minor league organization could be in the playoffs for their respective leagues.
You know, it's funny because if there was like a bunch of veteran players, I know Double A, you don't see much of that, but a few years ago, Corpus Christi, and I guess you guys would notice. Corpus Christi had a ton of like 25, 26-year-old guys who had no business being in Double A. And, you know, now they're doing it with, you know, Preston Tucker, Leo Harris, you know, Stassi before he got called up. Preston Tucker is my favorite. Him and Vincent Velasquez are my favorite two minor leaguers to follow because I think they're so under the radar and they're going to blow people away once they get here.
One like that for me is definitely MP Kokonos. I don't know what it is about MP Kokonos, but the dude flat out rakes.
MP.
Yeah, he's one of my favorites. I mean, I guess along with the Springer and all that, Springer and Singleton being there, I don't know who would be my favorite. Who'd be my favorite minor leaguer right now? I'd have to go with Asher Wojciechowski just by default, just because the guy is such a cool guy. And Mike Fultonevich.
Fulty.
I love Fultonevich, dude.
Yeah.
He's something else also. That system, it's went from where people are like, I'm sort of excited about this guy. Kinda this guy maybe. Jose Altuve, it's pocket Jesus, you know, and that was really the only one that came out of the minors back what was it, like 2 years ago? And the minors were still awful back then. Worse than the league 2 years ago. That's the only guy that anybody really got excited about coming out of the minors. Now it's, you know, everybody's freaking out about Stassi once he came up. Nobody knows when Springer's coming up, but they can't wait for it. You know, same with Wojciechowski. People are calling for
some starting pitcher's head, and he's actually pitching good, which is Keuchel. They're like, you know, he's not a rotation guy. Get him out of the rotation. Well, he hadn't pitched bad enough to lose his job.
See, to me, I think when the rankings come out next year, people are gonna be blown away, and I can't wait for the first idiot who says, "Oh, the Astros are in the top three of farm systems, weren't they? I thought they had a horrible farm system," and mm-hmm. and because of what the Astros went through 2 years ago, when everybody's pretty consensus now is saying they have the deepest farm system in baseball, and now they're probably going to be top five, if not top three, and have three of the first 40 picks in next year's draft. Yeah, good draft class.
I was about to just throw that in there. It's not. It's this year's draft class. Aside from the first five picks, this draft class was pretty weak. You know what I mean? And the Astros still did what I thought. It wasn't a really pretty draft, but it was definitely a success in terms of draft. You know, they got a bunch of polished guys, which last year they went straight high ceiling, and you can't go high ceiling every year in and out. You know what I mean? You got to get some polish in your farm system. Otherwise, those high ceiling guys aren't, because high ceiling, they're high risk, also high reward. A lot of times they can be high risk, though.
Man, next year's draft's going to be pretty.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, I'm not like huge onto the draft where I'm studying it all the time. So I didn't know that it's the middle of the two draft picks. I can't think of what it's called. Compensation pick?
Compensation. No, yeah. The competitive balance.
There you go. Competitive balance. I didn't know it came with its own money. And so I was kind of nervous. I was like, well, all these people are freaking out about Rodon. He may not even be the number one draft pick, but the competitive balance comes with its own money. So if it didn't, I was going to bet on Jacob Gatewood being the first pick, but probably going to be Rodon.
Yeah, you got to go to Rodon, man.
Mm-hmm.
All right, guys. Well, I'd say that wraps up this episode of the Stros Bros podcast. Any final words, parting words you guys like to say?
Nah, I got nothing.
I was expecting something. Alex, got anything?
The Mexicans are coming, boys. The Mexicans are coming. We're coming for the Alamo, boys.
Oh, my God.
We're coming for our territory.
Taking it back. All right, guys. Hell yeah. I appreciate you all for listening. As always, follow us on Twitter at YokoRick, at The Stros Bros, at Lee_White73, and at LexThePlex. So thank you all for listening. Stay locked here for the Stros Bros. We'll have more podcasts coming at you, and we're going to get the site back up and going. So we appreciate you all listening, being faithful and loyal listeners. We appreciate y'all, and we will see you guys next time.
Peace.